Blog Talk Radio.
This is Austin Dillon, driver of the Dallas Chevrolet, and you're listening to The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain.
Live from Talladega, Alabama, you're in The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network. Big thanks to Talladega Super Speedway, track president Grant Lynch, public relations director Russell Brennan. Tickets are on sale now for the upcoming NASCAR Camping World Truck Series Fridge 250 October 18th and the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series Geico 500 October 19th. To purchase your tickets, call 877-GO-TODEGA or visit TalladegaSuperspeedway.com. This is more than a race. This is Talladega. Let's bring our good friend Reverend Joe on and let's get everything going on. We got a lot to talk about. Reverend Joe, how you doing tonight, bud?
Good, Tim. Let's get it going because I know you got a lot to talk about tonight. So let's go before the Lord. Lord, we thank you so much for all you do. Be with us, Lord, in every way. Protect all those involved in our sport, people making decisions to make good ones. Be with all of those who are involved in every way. Protect all of our fans, all of our pit crew members, all the officials, and all those involved. And also, please, Lord, be with all of our military men all over the world who are every day protecting us so we can have the freedom to do what we do. And we thank you for Jesus Christ who saved us from all that. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Woo! Woo!
Thank you very much. And I know we've got a lot going on, but at this time I want to give you your time to, if you have anything else going on with your website and everything that y'all are doing for the is it the Racing for Jesus deal thing?
It's On Track with Jesus. It's ontrackwithjesus.org or .com. We'll get you to our website, and we're getting ready this weekend. We'll actually be leaving Thursday night to go out to Vegas for the truck race. A little bit tight on funds for it, but that one's not as expensive as some of the others we do. We get some help there from some good people who provide us with a room, and the track is very, very accommodating and helps us out greatly. So we'll be heading to a truck race at Vegas this weekend and give you a report on it next week.
Yes, sir. That sounds good. And for everybody, Reverend Joe, where can everybody follow you at? They can follow you on Facebook, follow you on Twitter too, also, correct?
Yes, sir. They can follow us on both of those. It's Joe Bubico on Facebook or on Twitter, and also at ontrackwithjesus.org. And we're glad to have them, and be glad to field any of their questions or such. As you've noticed, Tim, I've been posting scriptures from the Bible every week, going through the Book of John. And anyone has any questions, welcome them, whether they want to call me on the phone or email me. Be glad to work with them, help them, speak with them, discuss with them, even dispute with them if they'd like. So we appreciate that very much. God bless you guys. Have a wonderful week. And get down to it, because you got a lot of rules to go over.
Yes, sir, I know. Thank you very much, Reverend Joe. Y'all be safe out there in Vegas, bud. We'll talk at you next week.
I will, sir. God bless you. Take care.
God bless you, too. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was our Reverend Joe. At this time, I'd like to bring CEO SpeedwayDigest.com.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Stephen Wilson, how's everything going up there in Virginia this evening, my friend?
Well, not too bad tonight. It's actually cooled off a little bit. I think we're out of all the hot weather I think we're going to get, and hopefully, here in the next couple of months, I hope we don't get any snow.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And, Stephen, we have just about 5 minutes before your contact comes on, if you'd like to announce that, which I'll go ahead and say. I want to give a big shout-out to Tim Clegg, ARCA Racing broadcaster, ArcaRacing.com. He got with me. We've got Mason Mitchell coming on seven Central, 8 Eastern, and your contact. You got a big contact coming on here in just a few minutes, bud.
Yeah. Andrew Danes, he is the CEO and president of Preplay Sports, which just announced here about 2 weeks ago that they were now taking over the Fan Vision company, and that they plan to next year bring some new technologies into the sport, bring the fans a little bit closer. And I think we'll let him talk a little bit about that and what their plans are for the rest of this year and where they plan to go at in the future now that they've taken over Fan Vision.
Okay. And there's been a lot of news come out in NASCAR today, you know, just like me and you've been texting back and forth. We got, you know, NASCAR announces the new 2015 rules package, and we might have Mr. Stephen Connor coming on. He mentioned he might want to come on and add some stuff. I mean, you know, we could talk about that all night. We've got that, and we've got the past weekend races that we've had. We've got NASCAR announced they're going to do a deal with YouTube where you can go on and watch everything. And then, I mean, there's just all kind of stuff that come. We got the clinch scenarios for Dover International Speedway. That would be another topic we could talk about. And Tim Clagg sent me a thing on Mason Mitchell. But we got just a few minutes. And if we don't get into the ARCA side and the Cups, the ARCA side and Nationwide and the trucks, you want to cover anything as far as the Cup side while we got a few minutes, bud?
Yeah, we can run over a little bit here. This weekend at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, we'll just run through that here real quickly. We've got about 2-3 minutes before Andrew will be on the show. Joe Logano was your winner there this weekend at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. He locked himself in, moving on to the contender round, leading out of Dover next week. It's his fourth victory and 17th top 10 of 2014, and his second victory and fifth top 10 in 13 races at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Kyle Larson, again this week, had a heck of a run out there. He was a top finishing rookie and finished second this week. Kevin Harvick right there again, finishing third, so not much change between the second and third position between the last 2 weeks between Chicagoland and New Hampshire. Brad Keselowski, by virtue of leaving out of there, he had a few problems early on, got backed up into the wall and came back, had a decent finish out there, and left out of New Hampshire Motor Speedway with a one-point lead over Joey Logano. This weekend we're going to move into Dover and we're going to chop some people off and kick them off the island to kind of cut this down from 16 to 12. And, you know, there's a few people out there this week that kind of, even that they really need to step it up. Danny Hamlin is definitely one. He's by virtue, he controls his own destiny, and he's in a must-win situation, as well as even that Eric Almirola had a fairly decent finish there at New Hampshire this weekend, had some troubles early on, but came back and had a decent finish up there. But he's another one that is going to is in a win or no-win situation where he's got to win in order to move on to the contender round leaving out of Dover International Speedway this weekend.
Yeah, and with that being said, Stephen, you know, like we've talked about a bunch of nights on the show, you know, we've talked about tweaking the chase and everything, and there's a lot of people. I talked to a lot of my coworkers today, and they were talking about they don't necessarily agree how NASCAR is resetting the points after everything and is, you know, just going all the way down. And one of my fellow coworkers asked me, said, so now, Tim, you're saying even if you don't win a race, as long as you stay in the points up there and you could be in the last race at Homestead Miami Speedway. I said, yes, sir, Ray, you sure can. And, you know, that's another thing that we can talk about. Stephen, what's your take on that?
Well, I mean, NASCAR has done what they feel is going to be best. They needed to make a change in the chase, as with every sporting company out there, they have to make a change from time to time on how they crown their champion. You even take a look at college football, where this is their first year of the playoff scenarios, where they're no longer going to be ranked in the BCS rankings and play for a national championship. Even they've gone to an NFL-style knockout. You're going to continue to play until you're knocked out, and the final two teams in the nation are going to, you know, even if you are wanting to, you have the possibility of being kicked out and not being in that championship game coming there to the end. But NASCAR has done a heck of a job with this year. They've made some changes in there where it definitely puts these drivers, makes them get up on the wheel, makes them have to be in these positions where they have no choice but to win to continue moving on, even though that by virtue of the points, the way that they are set, when we knock them down from 16 to 12 to 8 to 4, they still have to be consistent. People have always said,
yeah,
and fans have always said, where drivers need to be consistent. They need to stop slacking off. They need to just stop hanging around mid-pack, doing what they got to do to continue moving on. They want drivers to be consistent. They want drivers to go out there and run for those wins, give it 100%, as NASCAR said, crowning a champion when we come to Miami Homestead with four drivers that essentially you've got three other drivers you've got to compete against. And whoever finishes or wins the race, you know, they've got to be up on the wheel for all 400 miles there at Miami Homestead Speedway.
Yeah, I will agree. And, Stephen, while we're waiting on Andrew Danes, we've got a first-time caller. His name is NASCARRick24. That must be his Twitter handle. Suzanne's put down there, someone wants to talk racing. So we're going to bring NASCARRick in. NASCARRick, you're in the pit stop with Tim Spain and Stephen Wilson on Speedway Digest Radio Network. How you doing tonight?
Hey, fun guy. You got shit in your ass.
Sorry about that, Stephen. That was somebody that slipped through. Fans, I will apologize about that. Anyway, while we're waiting, whoever that guy was, he better not be from Talladega. Stephen, I want to go over, this came out of NASCARmedia.com, the clinch scenarios for Dover International Speedway. Brad Keselowski, Joe Logano have each clinched a spot in the contenders round via their wins at Chicagoland Speedway and New Hampshire Motor Speedway, respectively. Below are the finishes each driver needs in Sunday's race at Dover, which will be broadcast live on ESPN at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, to guarantee a spot in the contenders round regardless of the finish of any other driver. I'm going to try to go slow. Kevin Harvick can clinch with a 34th or better, or 35th and at least one lap led, or 36th and most laps led. This is going to get confusing to a lot of people, Stephen, because when I read it, it did me too. Jimmy Johnson can clinch 24th or better, or 25th and at least one lap led, or 26th and most laps led. Kyle Busch and Dale Earnhardt Jr., 21st or better, 22nd, and at least one lap led, or 23rd, and most laps led. So they both must be right there in the same scenario. Jeff Gordon, 14th or better, and at least one lap led, 16th, and most laps led. Matt Kenseth and Carl Edwards, 2nd or 3rd, and most laps led. That's when you get down here to the ones that are outside looking in. A.J. Allmendinger has to finish 2nd. Casey Kane, 2nd, and at least one lap led. Ryan Newman, Denny Hamlin, Greg Biffle, Kurt Busch, and Eric Almirola only control their own destiny by winning Sunday at Dover. So we're down to the final round before everything transfers over. Who do you see not making it, Stephen? You know, I was on Let's Talk Racing TV show the other night with Roger Brenham and Scott Allen and them. Great bunch of people. Glad to have me on. And I picked both of the – I picked Carl Edwards and Greg Biffle not to make it. A.J. Allmendinger, I put him out, and I can't remember who my fourth guy was. What's your take on that, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few drivers that obviously have just not run well. Kurt Busch, he just hasn't had the best season. Yes, he's got a win, so he locked himself in earlier this year by virtue of his win there at Martinsville in the spring. However, through the rest of the season, he really just hasn't had that great a season. So, obviously, you know, we can go ahead and cut him. I believe he will not make this. He will not make the contender round. Eric Almirola will be yet another driver. He's had a good year. He won there at Daytona by virtue of that rain delay or the rain shortened race there. He's had some top tens. He's ran really very well at some tracks that he hasn't in the past. Yeah, I don't think he particularly again has enough to win the race there at Dover. Now, what I will also say is that Ryan Newman has had a heck of a year. He was ninth going into Richmond. He may not have won a race, but yet he's been very consistent running there at the finish every single weekend. He's had some great luck this year without an incident, you know, on the track. So I think that he has the potential this weekend to win. But I will also say that I think Casey Kane is going to be my other person that I'm going to have to kick out. I don't believe he's going to move on. I don't believe that he can run well enough there at Dover. And I believe that if anything, you know, Ryan Newman will be moving on, and Casey Kane, Denny Hamlin, Greg Belfour, and Casey Kane, Kurt Busch, Almirall, and Belfour will be the four left out this weekend.
I will agree with you, Stephen. And at this time, we've got your guest, Mr. Andrew Daines, CEO of Preplay and everything else. We want to bring Andrew on. We want to bring him on with a this right here.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Andrew, how you doing this evening? You're in the pit stop with Tim Spain, Stephen Wilson on Speedway Digest Radio Network. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. With that sound effect, I wonder if we're in for a fight now.
Well, the phone lines have lit up, and actually, Andrew, we had somebody that sort of slipped through a while ago, and Suzanne, my wife, tries to screen everything, and I had to apologize for what this fan did, but I guess that's, you know, sort of part of it when you do this public radio thing. But anyway,
yeah, it goes thanks territory, I guess.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it does. And I want to thank you for what you've done for the sport and everything, and I want to hand you over to Stephen Wilson, and after he answers, ask you a few questions, I might have a couple, if that's okay, bud.
Okay, fire away.
Hey, Andrew, Steve Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. First question I have for you tonight is that, tell us a little bit about Preplay Sports. A lot of us out there don't really know a whole lot about you guys, but we do know about the fan vision that you guys have acquired, and we'll kind of get into that a little bit more through my next question that I have for you.
Yeah, so Preplay Sports is about 4 years old, and we make games. We're a video games company, and our games always have the same idea. It's all about the fans making predictions about what's going to happen next in a sporting event. And so far, we've done that with football and hockey and baseball, and we hope to do some more sports in the future. But it's all about fans making predictions, but not like who's going to win, but really small predictions during the match, like, you know, what is it going to be a run or a pass on this down, or will it be a single or a flyout on this at bat for baseball?
And how you guys just here recently in the last couple of weeks announced that you are acquiring FanVision, which goes to not only NASCAR events, but I believe they're also involved in golf and some other sports out there where fans are able to go to these events and they get a little bit closer. They're able to see live replays at the races. They're able to see timing and scoring, radio traffic between drivers, the teams, NASCAR. How did that kind of come about, and how did you feel that would be a property or a brand that you could bring into the fold of your company?
Well, to start things off, you know, I wish it were the other way around, but actually FanVision is the company that bought Preplay. So I'm very happy to be joining the FanVision family and taking over as the CEO. And, you know, at the very start, I don't think any fans or any of the race teams that rely on our services are going to notice much of a change. The FanVision device and all the services we provide to the fans and to the teams are, you know, it's not really going to change much. But over the first 6 months or a year, what I hope to do is to bring the games that we've provided and all those interactive kind of video game style experiences and merge those a little bit with the video and audio content that go along with the FanVision name. And bring those kind of best of both worlds together. That's really the plan here.
And forgive me on that. I for some reason I thought that you guys had bought FanVision. Forgive me on that. But as you had stated, is that you would like to bring some of these the more of the video game and mobile applications that, you know, are dominating the world these days. And how do you feel that that's going to be able to translate over into the FanVision properties? And with your background experience in the mobile world, is that something that you guys feel that you may be able to go to these events and not necessarily have to have a on-site device anymore, but giving fans the ability to do so across their mobile phone, whether they're either at the house or whether they're somewhere else or even coming to the track or an event? Do you feel that you can play a little bit on more on that a little bit more and broaden that spectrum as far as the mobile world is concerned?
Yeah, I do think that the merger of Preplay and FanVision will help with that. As the world is today, the kind of high-quality fan-focused experience that's available on a FanVision device just really isn't possible on a mobile device. But, you know, I'm an optimist. I believe that in the future that battery life on your mobile phone is going to get better. Wireless networks are going to get better. Wi-Fi is going to get better. I believe all those things will improve over time, and I think we're going to be in a great position as a company to capitalize on that because we know how to build really great iPhone and Android apps. But for right now, we're talking about a bridge to the future, bridging the FanVision device and all the great things that only it can do, bringing as many of its features over to your mobile apps that you can, and then maybe someday in the future, 3 or 5 years out, we can do everything on your mobile phone, but we've got to find a bridge to that future.
And do you think that, you know, with this and bridging that gap, do you feel that you can work with not only NASCAR, but the individual racetracks and the individual stadiums and the other sports sanctioning bodies out there that you will work with here coming up as soon as within the next year or so? Do you feel that this conversation will be able to move forward and maybe prep some of these tracks or some of these properties that don't necessarily have great Wi-Fi coverage, you know, and kind of bridge that gap into the future for them?
You know, it's all about investment. And obviously your big races, your Daytona, you're going to have that level of investment. What we're able to do with FanVision, which is great, is we're able to show up with all the equipment that we need. You know, we don't need to rely on anybody else's Wi-Fi or you know, Verizon or anybody else's wireless network. We're able to show up with everything we need to broadcast an event. I think that that's going to be the same. I doubt anybody's going to spend the millions or tens of millions it'll take to get every single racetrack out there Wi-Fi enabled. But we still want to be able to show up and broadcast all we need to do with our own equipment, but, you know, ultimately send it to your phone, not have to send it over somebody else's wireless network.
And my last question of the night, and now you touched just a little bit on this about you trying to bridging the gap there to bring some of these apps to the phone as well as bringing some of your products over to the FanVision. Outside of that, where do you foresee FanVision and your company Preplay Sports moving to into the future as far as the next step in your technology?
You know, what I've seen so far, and, you know, forgive me, I've only been doing this for 1 week. It's my first week on the job, but what I see in the future is the delivery of FanVision and services like that to many more sports. We're so lucky and grateful that, you know, we're a major, we have a presence at every single race all season long. But I think that there's, as we develop more experiences that are just on your mobile phone, we're going to find greater and greater markets outside of NASCAR and have greater success in whether it's golf or tennis or your NBA game or whatever it is. I think we're going to grow into more sport the more that we can get onto your mobile phone. I think that's what the future looks like.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming on the show tonight, and I'm going to kick you back over to Tim.
All right, Tim.
Hey, Andrew. Yeah, I want to thank you for what you do for all this technology stuff. I'm sort of old school, if you would say, but I'm picking up on everything. I got the iPhone, and, you know, you were talking about battery life and stuff. I got a Mophie for my iPhone 5 and love it and just downloaded the iOS 8. Back before myself and Suzanne acquired media credentials to go to the racetracks and promote the show, promote the sport, we used to set up in the stands. I bought a little scanner from Radio Shack and bought us two headsets, and we had a splitter, and, you know, we'd spend all night the race before here at Talladega getting all the scanner frequencies in. Do you see down the road, maybe I was listening to you and Stephen talking some, I was doing some other stuff, maybe scanner frequency to some of your apps, maybe for the NASCAR fans, that way they can listen with their iPhone?
I definitely see that. You know, FanVision right now, the FanVision device, has all the frequencies you need. You can plug headphones into it right there and listen to any of the teams that you want to. So we're lucky that we already have that audio, that content that we need. And getting that through to an iPhone app is a major goal, and we're working really hard to bridge that gap. Right now we have the same problem maybe that you face when you go to the track, which is with 100,000 people there, it can be a little bit tough to get a signal, right? Luckily, FanVision
right.
doesn't have that problem, but we're working to bridge the gap so that you can actually do it on your phone.
That sounds good. And is there anything that you want to talk about, or anything that you can talk about, Andrew, about some of your new stuff coming out to share with the fans, and where to follow you at, and where to actually go, and exactly where to download the app on the app store? You got the floor, bud.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, and I kind of wanted, if it's all right, to turn around on you fellas and just ask you, what is the number one thing? I mean, are both of you FanVision device users? Have you used the device before?
I myself have not, Andrew, but Steven has one.
Steven,
go ahead.
So, is there anything that device isn't doing for you that you hope it'll do for you in the future? Anything we can do for you?
I'm looking. You know, we've actually got a deal with FanVision that we started earlier this season, where you guys have been providing us a couple this year that we've been taking to the track. I've been splitting it the two between our five riders that we have. Overall, you know, everybody that's put their hands onto it, everybody that's used it on the weekend for their coverage, has always found that it has done everything that we're looking to do. One of the things that, you know, we always have a problem with a lot of times is that when you sit in the media center or you sit anywhere in the track, as people know, the timing and scoring is not, you know, doesn't run as fast as most people would like to, you know, but you can take a look at this device. It's a kind of a one-stop shop. And right now, you know, between the instant replays, the sprint vision that are already coming through on it, the live timing and scoring, the radio that's already built into it, you know, there's not, you know, I don't feel, you know, from my perspective, there's a whole lot more that you guys can crunch into such a little device, to tell you the truth. But, you know, as you said, you know, you guys are kind of like a mobile company, and you should, I feel that going into the future, I think there's things obviously that fans may like to see, and maybe will have a better perspective that, because I look at it as the fact that I use it for a multitude of reasons, the timing of the scoring, the live replays on the sprint vision, as well as other things. And it's kind of a one-stop shop for me, where I don't have to have three or four or five things open all at one time to actually do this. But in the future, I would like to, you know, hope that the fans can, you know, be a little bit more acclimated with the device, and I hope that you can get a little bit better distribution as far as the mobile apps are concerned, because I think that's really a big push going into the future as far as what fans are concerned, because just about every fan coming to the track these days has some kind of smartphone device that they would, you know, would love to connect into. And yes, we have NASCAR Mobile. Yes, we have, you know, Sprint apps and things like that. But, you know, not everybody is so lucky to you know, have a Sprint phone and be able to use that app.
Well, I mean, I thank you for the praise on the product. It sounds like we're doing a decent job supplying that for you. I'd just say that for any fans who kind of want to learn more or don't know about the device, it's fanvision.com. Love to see fans show up there, ask us any questions. You know, we do believe, and we know that the fans are anxious to get everything that the FanVision device does to throw that on their mobile phone. And as soon as we're able to do that, you know, at a very high quality, up to our standard, as soon as we can do that, we're going to do it.
Cool.
So,
and, you know,
because,
Andrew,
I mean, really. Oh, sorry, Tim.
I'm sorry, Stephen. Go ahead. No, sir. Go ahead, Stephen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, me as a technology guy, you know, I'm, you know, a lot of people don't realize is that I'm actually a network engineer. So, you know, I understand the technical abilities of what wireless and, you know, mobile networks are capable of. And, you know, obviously, as you said before, having 100,000 fans at any given race, doesn't matter how many, you know, mobile you know, hotspots they set up between the companies, it's always a diminishing you know, issue with bandwidth, with frequency and things of that nature. So obviously what you guys got going on kind of steps that up a little bit, being able to bring your own product in there. But, you know, just one thing I would always like to throw out there is that, you know, those mobile apps, you know, they're the way I feel, the way of the future. And you guys being able to bring some of your sports technology in there that you already have into the FanVision product, I think will just kind of bridge that gap, as you were saying, to get those fans more involved into the sport, not only there at the track, but at home too.
I couldn't agree with you more, and as you know from our product, we have very high standards for ourselves. So just as soon as we're able to do that and get it to a very high quality for the fans, that's exactly what we're going to do.
Okay. Andrew, this is Tim.
Go ahead, Tim.
This is Tim. All right. Thanks, Tim. Yeah, I have seen fans with them, Andrew, but, you know, like I said, I'm from the old school. And I've always took that old Radio Shack scanner with me, but I have never really seen one to actually see how it works. Maybe I can find somebody at Talladega this upcoming October, maybe look at it, which I know myself and Suzanne, we're gonna go up and join Stephen Wilson and his wife, Miss Anne Marie. We're going to Martinville, so maybe I can actually run up on somebody here at Talladega and actually see how one's worked. I've never had one in my hand.
Well, and what I love about the device is that If as you say, you're old school, it's still got all the stuff that's on your regular old scanner, plus amazing video and plus stats. But if you don't want to look at that screen, you just want to listen in like you've always done, you're welcome to do that too. So we've really got it all for you on there. We got to line up a demo for you.
That's cool. Thank you very much, Andrew. And if you need to go, if there's any last few things you want to throw out, are you going to be at Talladega, or are you going to be at Martinville, or are you going to attend any races here in the near future in this chase?
So Martinsville, I will be there.
You will be at Martinville. Okay, great. Me and Steven, we will look you up, bud.
All right. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you very much, Andrew.
All right. Thanks so much for having me on, fellas.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Andrew Danes, CEO of Preplay. Stephen, we've got a lot. We got Stephen Conley lined up. We got Todd Bigsby lined up, and we got a little bit before the top of the hour before Mason Mitchell comes on the point footer in the ARCA Racing Series. Let's bring Todd on first. Todd's been waiting a while. Todd, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing good.
Good, good. Did you listen to Andrew Danes? They are trying to blow this iPhone app stuff out the window, and I've done some research on them. They're doing a really great job, and with the FanVision stuff and all that, they're trying to integrate scanner stuff to maybe at you know, your iPhone and all that. Do you think that's a good move, or would you like to stay old school like me with an old Radio Shack scanner and a headset?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny you say that because for Christmas last year, I got the Radio Shack scanner with the headset. And, you know, going to the Glen, must be old timer or something, because I cannot operate that hand scanner.
Yeah, I understand that, Todd. I understand that. And we got a little bit, we've got Stephen Conley waiting, we've got Stephen Wilson. And we were going to talk about the new Stephen Conley agreed to come on. We're going to talk about the new rules package next year for the 2015 NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. We want to bring let's bring Stephen Conley on. We'll bring him on.
Let's get ready to rumble.
Stephen Conley, how you doing tonight, my friend?
Tim, Steve, it's great to talk to you guys again. I'm having it's been a good day. I've had a lot of stuff going on. Been pretty busy. These new rule changes, looking into these. So it's been a pretty hectic day around NASCAR Nation news wise.
Yeah, I know, Steve. And I've really been at work. I hadn't really had time to look at nothing. But if you and Stephen Wilson, which I'll hand it over to Stephen. I know he really wants to talk about this. And you and Stephen and Todd can talk about this and I'll go through some paperwork. I'll step aside.
Ah, well, that works. Yeah, Steve, go ahead.
So it's the Steve and Steve show for right now. Tim's going to step aside. All right, well. Anyway, so 60 rule changes today come out of NASCAR concerning next year, and I'm sure we could write a book about it and talk for the next 3 hours. Out of all of those rule changes, what do you feel is the most profound thing that they are going to change next year? And I would like something outside of the no testing rule, if possible.
Well, I'll tell you, and as I was looking through some of this, I had a lot of questions about what the engine rules were going to do. I knew engine reductions were coming after the Michigan race, where we had record speeds, and then they did the test there, trying to lower downforce. So I knew there was going to be something coming along with that. But the decision to use a tapered spacer in the Sprint Cup Series has really kind of thrown me for a loop, to be completely honest with you. I was surprised that they've made that decision. We've seen it for about 4 or 5 years now in the Nationwide Series. And the racing quality in the Nationwide Series is not, I don't think, has been that great, because just what guys say, they get out on track, they can go full throttle with these tapered spacers down. Are we going to see the same thing with Sprint Cup cars? Downforce is higher. Lower RPMs, lower horsepower. So I'm a little intrigued by that, and I've done a little digging into some comments Doug Yates had to say about this after the announcement, which I think is really kind of interesting if NASCAR is trying to save teams money.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for years, you know, obviously, you know, this has been a long time coming. You know, every year we do see the speeds go up, you know, even if it's just about a mile or two per hour. But, you know, obviously we've gotten to the point that you take a look at somewhere like Fontana, where they're hitting turn one at 203, 204, sometimes as high as 205, 206, depending on if they're behind a car in the draft or not. And then obviously they're at Michigan. Yeah, I have always been under – you know, I'm kind of old school when you look at it. Instead of band-aiding the issue, putting restrictive plates on, using tapered spacers and things of that nature, I've always kind of been of the opinion that if these guys can build an 850-horsepower engine, why can't they just go back building a 750-horsepower engine, forget the tapered spacers onto it? You're going to reduce the horsepower in the motors no matter what, and you're going to reduce the speed. So why do you feel that they're not doing that and just kind of band-aiding the issue with what more or less amounts to a restrictor plate that we would see at Daytona and Talladega?
Well, I think the easiest way to describe that and look at it is Pandora's box. Once you have it opened, once that horsepower is out there, there's no way to build it back down. I think that it's a 358 cubic inch motor that they run, the horsepower that's in it. Now, NASCAR has made some decisions as far as this. There are going to be some changes inside of that engine block as far as what they're allowed to use. They've got some changes to the lifters. They're going to a flap taper, from a flap taper to a roller lifter, which, from what I understand, is going to actually help teams enhance the longevity of these motors. Are going to be a different type of lifter, so they won't break as easy. They've got more strength to them, and it's just a different style that teams are going to have to work with here. But one of the things that Doug Yates said is that even with these tapered spacers, the teams still have the ability to continue to rework that horsepower up. So there's not a limitation completely on the horsepower. They're just trying to bring it back down. But the teams, as they have always done, they'll work on these motors. They'll continue to try to get more horsepower through that tapered spacer. The problem that they're going to have is that NASCAR has also reduced the maximum amount of RPMs that these cars can turn from 9,500 is what they're running today down to 9,000. So a reduction of 500 horsepower or 500 RPMs. So that's going to be something that's going to be different for them to have to work with. There's a lot of things that they're going to have to work with inside of these motors. And as Doug Yates said, he said, we've got a lot of work to do.
in a very, very short time because they have to have these things ready for not only a test coming up at Fontana, but for that first race with this engine package in Atlanta in March of next year.
Well, yeah, and obviously, you know, you can take a look at the issue that way as far as, you know, going to the taper spaces, going to the roller rockers on top of the motors that they have and reducing the RPMs down by 500 RPMs. Yet, when you take a look at, and this kind of what I also feel negates this issue is NASCAR has also reduced the minimum weight of the car. And as you know, when you reduce the minimum weight of the car, car is lighter, car can still, you know, it can still maintain the same amount of speed with the less horsepower into it. Why do you feel that NASCAR has gone ahead and reduced it? And I believe it was like 50 or 60 pounds, 40 pounds on the left side of the car by removing that ballast, if I remember correctly.
Well, I think one of the things that they're trying to do here is they're trying to reduce, by taking that weight away, they're going to reduce some of that aero grip that teams have been using so much. It's lightening these cars up, changing the right side weight on it, reducing the rear spoiler height, trying to get back to a little bit more of mechanical grip at the back of the car than having that aero grip on the front of the car. So I think by some reductions in weight, it's going to change the way that teams set the cars. It's going to change. You're going to have less weight, especially on that right front tire. I think that's one of the biggest things that they're going to be looking at. So I think some of those reductions are going to be changed. They're hoping in changes of the mechanical grip getting back to working with the cars instead of so much aerodynamics itself.
And I'm going to make this last kind of statement and question. I'm going to pose this to you also is that NASCAR through natural progression, as we've always seen, is that NASCAR has gone away from the carburetors. They've gone to electronic ESI modules in the car. This year they're now, starting in 2015, the teams are allowed to be going to a digital instrument panel as well as rear edge adjustments on the car from the cockpit. Now, NASCAR fans says that's a little bit kind of open wheelish. Where do you feel? Why do you think that change was made, or do you just feel that was just a natural progression that NASCAR is making going into the future? Because that's kind of where we've got to go. You got to keep up with technology, or you fall behind.
Well, I think the digital dash. Brian France has been talking about that for about 2 years now. In fact, when he first mentioned it, I think he called it a glass dash, if I'm remembering right. Something a lot of people were really confused by. But I think with the fact that they're going to this, it's something that can be monitored more. It will take out some of the required electronics that are behind the dashboard itself. It'll also allow more transition for officials and teams to read instrument displays and things that'll stay there. If they plug in their computer, they can get all that information off that dash. I think that's one of the things that they're looking for. Now, as far as – and it's the adjustable track bar that is going to give the driver something. I don't know right now where I stand on this. I've heard both sides of the argument from not only drivers and teams. A lot of the teams, in fact, crew chiefs, say they don't want drivers adjusting these cars. Tell them what they're doing, fix it outside the car. Because now you're going to get to a point where a driver, one lap, he's saying the car's loose, he makes that adjustment, now it's way too tight, makes another adjustment, and it's okay. They get through the full run, and the car's doing something different. So you're going to have three or four different times that you're going to have information relayed to the crew chief, and the car is going to change three or four times, plus its natural changes with tire wear, with fuel, and how much did the driver adjust it. So I think there's something there. It can work, but I think it's going to change a lot of strategy and the way things are handled on pit road, and drivers are going to have to learn a lot more about these cars than they knew before.
Okay, well, I mean, you brought an excellent point there. One thing that I'm going to add to this argument is that I come from a technological background. My degree has nothing to do with NASCAR. I'm a network engineer. I've worked on computers for over 15 years. And anybody that knows these teams and knows computer engineers and programmers and is definitely going to put these guys in a much better foothold to get into the NASCAR world. However, saying that is that with these new technological changes, especially with the digital dashboard and some of the other changes that are being made with the sensors in the car, it's easier, and what I feel is those, than it was the mechanical dashboard as they're currently running as it is. You know, throughout the history of NASCAR, there's always been somebody out there trying to look at the gray side of the rules. It's not necessarily black and white. It's kind of in between gray side. All it's going to take is, especially like you take a team like Hendricks or Roush or Penske and some of these guys that really have a background in engineering, that they brought on programmers and things like that, especially with the EFI module. It's just going to take but a matter of a very smart person to figure out how to cheat some of these. And while, yes, NASCAR can walk up to the car, plug in their modules, I mean their monitors, see what's going on in the car, I feel that kind of, without NASCAR going through and making a wholesale rule change as far as that's concerned, and I think they're going to have to go with a common rule set, sort of like they've brought in McLaren for the EFI modules or Holley for the EFI modules. I think they're going to have to do the same, especially with the digital dashboards and the other sensors that they will allow in 2015. Otherwise, you're going to have teams out there that are going to figure out how to cheat the rules and reprogram these things in a way that NASCAR, it may not necessarily catch the first time or the second time or the third time, but somewhere down the road, these teams are, and NASCAR will eventually catch on, I feel, and without a roll package in there, I think it kind of leaves it up a little bit to interpretation. And one more, yes, what you were talking about, the glass dashboards, is that, yes, about 2 or 3 years ago, Brian France did talk about these digital instrument monitors that will kind of be displayed, I believe, on the front windshield that will kind of give drivers a little bit more information, especially what's going on around them. That was something I believe that they were talking about a couple of years ago, and I think this is where they are eventually going to go into the future.
Yeah, kind of give them that fighter jet heads-up display type of view, which I think would be interesting, but at the same point in time, I don't want too many things in front of a driver's eyes, especially when they're focusing on the back bumper a couple inches off at Daytona and Talladega. That's a whole lot going on inside of those race cars. And I've always been under I've had the question of whether NASCAR is becoming too technologically advanced. And I think some of these changes, to be completely honest, are heading that way. I mean, we've got things here in the rules that now gives optional McLaren steering angle sensors, which allow teams to monitor not only how far the steering wheel is turning, but how far the wheels themselves are actually turning during a race. And I thought part of the whole thing with the EFI, you couldn't have that computer on pit road. You had to go behind the wall to monitor this type of information. Now you're going to have sensors on the car that are allowed to basically monitor that whole thing. So there's some things in here that I think are going to be good for progress, but there's definitely some that are not only a wait and see, but I think it's going to develop a lot of questions real early. And one of the things that comes out of the discussion with Doug Yates is about, and I know you wanted to kind of avoid a little bit of the testing, but one of the things he said is about the testing, you've got aerodynamic changes coming to the car, you've got power changes coming to the car, and now you're not allowed to test at all unless you're going to a Goodyear tire test. And those, you show up with car, everything's mandated the way it has to be run. You set the car up, you don't make any changes to it. So I think in the first year of some of these rules, you're going to have a lot of very unfortunate situations, or you're going to have teams that are so skittish to really push the speed that it's going to be just a flat-out drive away by one or two drivers, and it's going to look like it was 10, 15 years ago, where it was just dominated by one or two drivers. And that is going to be a real unfortunate circumstance if that is what ends up happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're absolutely correct talking about that. And you know, that NASCAR has always tried to differentiate themselves away from the open wheel IndyCar, where everything is controllable from the cockpit. That's always what separated them. That's always what made them different. And it always seemed that, you know, that was always a lot of things that when you talk to fans, is they like the differences in that. You know, you look back 20, 30 years ago, and people even then were saying, well, these aren't stock cars anymore. They're purpose-built race machines in a shop somewhere. Well, yes, you know, that's true, but in one sense, but these are still stock cars. These are still something that you can identify out on the street. But at the same time, these are still cars that they have to go out there and race. These are teams have to go out there and work on the cars throughout the race. And I feel that one of the things that has done is that drivers themselves these days don't know enough about the cars other than getting into it and holding the steering wheel, turning left and mashing the gas pedal down. Some of these changes are going to have to change that mentality with these drivers. And you're going to see drivers out there like Ryan Newman that has an engineering background that can obviously work well on these cars. But you're going to have drivers out there where you take an example of some of these drivers that have not come up. They have not built their own cars. They've always been a very much, you can drive, get in the car, hold the steering wheel, turn left, and mash the gas pedal down. You don't need to work on the car. That's our job. And I think that's, you know, that mentality is going to have to change back to the fact that these drivers are going to have to know what they're doing, not only with the driving aspect, but they need to know the engineering aspect, because as you said just moments ago, where, you know, obviously a driver can make a change on one lap and the next lap it's, you know, they're making a change again. And you've got three changes before you even come to pit road the first time in the day, and then the team has no clue on what to do with the car because now you've made three or four changes in there. And that's going to I guess it's going to be a learning curve for some of these drivers, but they're going to have to go back and learn some of this stuff all over again where they've not had to do so in the past.
Right. And I know you guys are getting up close to the top of the hour and you have a guest at 8 o'clock, but there are two more things that I'd really like to point out here real quick that NASCAR has added to this, and it's the mandatory addition of wipers, defoggers, and rear flashing rain lights on these cars for race weekends at the road courses. Now, obviously, Sonoma, you're not likely going to have too much rain, maybe a little bit here and there, not something where this is going to be necessary. Watkins Glen, obviously, it rains up there, it rains a lot, you're going to be in this situation. I don't like racing in the rain, but if you're going to have them, I think the thing that you have to have is another road course, and I think this is going to be leading to something in 2016 that brings another road course onto the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series schedule that makes this all worthwhile, putting this stuff onto these cars for road racing. And then the other thing is the new officiating rules, where NASCAR is going to be automated officiating. No more officials go over pit wall, and there's not going to be an official in every pit box. That concerns me. That bothers me just a little bit when you're going to have not an official in every pit box with the way that these teams work.
Yeah. I was kind of taking a look at that myself. And earlier this year when they did make that announcement that they were going to begin testing some technologies, especially with high-definition cameras in these pit boxes. And as anybody knows, from statement came from NASCAR, is they're going to have about six or eight on pit road to watch over 43 cars, and there's going to be another six or eight on a high-tech trailer. Obviously, you know, no matter how many cameras you put into place and put in play at a racetrack, these teams are going to push those envelopes as far as they can push them. And whether that means, you know, what I have to look at is how many teams are going to try and cheat this in the aspect of some of the changes that they are doing. Granted, six or eight officials on pit road to watch over 43 cars, you cut that down by the end of the race to maybe 30 or 32 with accidents, attrition, things of that nature, start and park. you still don't have enough eyes on pit road, no matter, even with the cameras. They already use the cameras for ends of pit roads, things of that nature, and I would agree that that's kind of like a I think we will see to put it lightly, some finagling with the rules, depending on which team they are and how bad that they're willing to push the rule package.
Yep, absolutely, and that's definitely has to be a concern. And it's, I mean, the cameras are watching the cars over the wall, but who's watching the teams, what's going on behind the pit box, what's going on with those tires, what's going on with other changes that they're working on. And then on top of that, I mean, how many times have we seen pit crews scuffle and it's the officials that are right in the middle of it that's separating these teams? A camera's not going to get down and separate 12, 15 guys that are throwing haymakers at each other. So, I mean, I'm interested to see how that works. The covering the pit stop, I think that's great. I think it's going to work great, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. But I still think this is a sport about people, and you need people in these pit boxes.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, one of my kind of biggest concerns that I have to look at is that, as I said, the camera can't watch every angle of the car. So, yes, they may be watching the pit stop, but they can't put a camera directly in front of the car and watch 360 degrees of the car by no means. And having that extra set of eyes, and sometimes, depending on the pit box that you're in, sometimes you have as many as two officials watching over your car, and I think it really needs to continue having more. I think whatever it was, six or eight, that was supposed to be on pit road, that really needs to be expanded, maybe put one every other box so that they can still watch over the cars.
Right. Totally agree with you. There's going to be a lot of interesting things coming up over the next year and a half, and the way changes work. And NASCAR has not been the same in many years, and I think this is a big change, and it's not your father's NASCAR, that's for sure, as we head into 2015.
That is most definitely right. Well, good talking to you, Stephen. Mason just came on the show. If you want to stay on, stay on. And don't be a stranger. Call in anytime. We can have these conversations anytime you wish.
I appreciate it. I look forward to it, guys. I've got to get back to writing some stories and myself. But you guys have a good night, and have a good time there with Mason. I'm sure that'll be a great interview. I mean, he's got a lot of talent. And look forward to seeing where his career progresses.
Stephen Conley, thank you very much. Sorry I had to step aside. I had to have a pit stop of my own, if you know what I'm talking about. But, yeah, Stephen, just like Stephen Wilson said, don't be a stranger. Well, Stephen Conley's already dropped. All right, let's bring on Mr. Mason Mitchell. He is a driver. I've lost my paperwork. I had some stuff coming on, but Mason is running for the ARCA Championship and going into the last race here at Kansas. Let's bring Mason on with a rumble.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Mason Mitchell, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing better now. That was an amazing intro.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah, Tim Clegg had emailed me some stuff today, but we hadn't had time to really go over as far as the clinch scenario about you going into the last race at Kansas. And, you know, I hate to say, don't take this the wrong way, my good friend Grant Enfinger from my home state, Alabama, had some problems. And I hate to say it, but he's probably out and everything looks good. But Mason, you're looking to win your first ARCA championship, bud.
Yeah, it's been an unbelievable season. You know, a lot of great people that have helped me get this far. You know, obviously, first off, Thermal Technology Services, Muzzleman's Applesauce, Wildlife Foundation of Florida, Applebee's for jumping on board with my first win there. That was a fantastic weekend for all of us, you know, that was involved. And everybody at Mason Mitchell Motorsports, all the guys that kind of got put in a situation this last winter that really was unknown, a lot of unknowns, a lot of people that didn't believe and didn't see that, you know, that there could have been success and potential. And we all got together and put this whole year together and fought really hard and dug deep and fortunate enough that it's worked out pretty well, to be honest, and, you know, getting the wins and competing for wins and being really consistent and obviously leading the point system right now. And it's unfortunate that Grant had problems because we've had good battles with him every weekend and going back and forth with the points. But obviously we have a good, you know, we're in good shape going into Kansas. I think we got to finish like 35th or better. We had the championship, but, you know, we're going to go there to win the race and celebrate the championship at the end of the day.
Congratulations, bud. Yes, you are right. If you finish 35th or better at Kansas, you will win a championship. And just throw this out there. This is from, Tim Clagg emailed me out this. This is a first-year team. Could become the first team since Tim Steele in 1993 to be the owner driver to win a championship.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You know, ARCA Series, obviously, I feel like pretty close to home where, you know, there's a lot of people involved with it family-wise. And it's been, I guess, that says a little while since someone that's done it on their own. And it's just a lot of people that have helped me. And just it's speechless at times just to see, because so much has happened in this whole year and have the success that we've had. It's unbelievable.
I know. And, you know, there's a lot of my friends, people that I talk to say, well, Grant has won more races than Mason has. I said, well, the ARCA points is a little bit different than what the Cup and everything else is. Would you like to explain what the points is, Mason, far as, you know, with you not having as many wins as Enfinger?
Yeah, I mean, I understand their argument, but the way the point system is, really based on consistency, and honestly, qualifying is almost more important than winning. Because you gain 15 points for winning the pole, and 10 for qualifying second, and 5 for third. And the way the stats showed, we have 5 poles this year in our qualifying. We've qualified a lot better than he has, and that's helped us out a lot in the points situation. And the consistency has helped us a lot. And, until ARCA changes the point system, I'm not going to race any differently. There's no need to if you're going for the championship. Now, if you're going for wins all the time, obviously you're going to put yourself in different positions and that you're a lot riskier. But there's no reason for me to change up the way I go about things if I need to win a championship. And obviously, I want to win more races. But, if you risk yourself from wrecking in situations like that, at the end of the day, is 5 points really worth it? And even in the Cup system, my opinion might be different than a lot of people's, but I still think consistency is almost more important because there's been a few people that have gotten in the chase this year without winning, and getting on to the next round, you still don't need to have wins. The only place you need to win is the final race of the year, Homestead, really, if you want to win the championship. You still might not have to win that race. So they try to make it more important by winning, but you can still beat everybody with consistency. But that's just my opinion. People don't have to agree with me on it, but I enjoy talking about it.
Yeah, I will agree with you, Mason. And from what I've read and what I've gathered up on you, it wasn't until November that y'all decided to start y'all's own team just 2 months before the ARCA opener at Daytona. Am I correct?
Yeah, you pretty much. I got on board Empire Racing, I believe, in late August or something like that last year in 2013. And we had some decent success there, competing for wins and winning a bunch of poles and setting track records. And then I knew I had to make a pretty big decision for my career, what I was going to do, and I had to make it pretty fast. And I always wanted to do my own deal, but I was kind of worried because I did that before and like late models and stuff, and it was just struggling. But career and racing and kind of like any, career or in life in general, you got to surround yourself with good people to be successful. And we decided to do our own team and form it all. And I'm not gonna lie, it was really hard at first and so many different situations that we got put in and a lot of walls, but we knocked them down and dug deep and rose to the occasion. And it was hard at first, but the success came kind of early. But we had really high expectations going into it, and a lot of people thought we were crazy, but and so far it's kind of worked out a little bit.
Well, yeah, Mason, everything has worked out real well. Didn't nobody think y'all were crazy at all. And just to throw this out there, you were talking about the points and how that y'all were staying – ahead of Grant. You accumulated 125 bonus points in qualifying in 2014 to Grant Enfinger 65. That is a big accomplishment in the championship run.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's 60 more points, I believe, right there or something. That's huge. That's what our we had a 50-point lead if I going into Kentucky, and if I didn't have those points right there, we wouldn't be in the position that was. So I'm an advocate of qualifying. I get a lot of a lot of people don't I qualify pretty well. I mean, I say I'm one of the better qualifiers in the series right now. It's just the way the stats are, but you have to get after in qualifying because that the points are so valuable. You can qualify on the pole and gain 15 points, lead the first lap, that's another 5 points, that's 20 points right there, and finish fourth or fifth, and you still get the same amount of points as first. So it's a big math equation at the end of the day.
Yeah, and you had an average starting spot of 3.8. I mean, that's unreal as far as qualifying. You were talking about that you're pretty good at qualifying, and yes, I have seen it. I've watched you on Fox Sports 1. Followed you on ArcaRacing.com with an average starting spot of 3.8. I mean, good Lord, bud, you can't beat that.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one, but we just have really good cars in qualifying. We have really good cars in the race and stuff. Just obviously a lot more things evolve in the race that can hurt your strategy or your setup or anything like that. But 3.8 average, that's almost a 3 average, and that's 5 points per race. Just do the math, it adds up to be a lot. And I believe Kentucky was 8 weeks in a row that we started on the front row. So it just says a lot about our whole organization, I feel like, in our qualifying package, and it just goes a lot towards the championship.
Yeah. And, Mason, I want to apologize for not trying to find you at the Talladega race. I was hanging out with Will Kimmel. Don't hang me or nothing for that. I was hanging out with my good friend Will. I apologize for not talking to you. But I want to I have my good friend Todd Bigsby from upstate New York. His home track is Watkins Glen International. Would you take a question from Todd, Mason?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, Todd, you're with Mason Mitchell and Tim Spain, Stephen Wilson.
Hey, Mason.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. I'm a big fan of yours. I follow your page on Facebook.
I appreciate it.
I'm hoping to see you pull this off, even though Grant is Tim's good friend, but I still like to see you pull this off. This past race was amazing. I mean, I like the design of it. It was really nice. Now, you got one race left.
Yep. Well, thank you. But one more race here left at Kansas, and it's in I think 9 days or something. Friday night in Fox Sports 2.
Well, I'm hoping next year I can at least make it to the Pocono race, so I can at least be able to see you guys.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Appreciate your support. Hopefully, I can see that.
My question is, you're doing so well in ARCA. Have you had any thoughts of doing anything else besides?
Pretty much, that's my main goal. I want to move up next year, into some different level of the Camping World Truck Series or Nationwide Series. It's going to be Xfinity Series. But obviously, you have to have all the opportunity there and the whole package together. So we're working hard on it and trying to see what's available. And hopefully, the success we've had kind of opens some eyes out there. But we're going to continue working really hard.
Hey, Todd, listen, I hate to put in. Todd, you've got something in the background that's echoing.
Hang on a minute.
Okay. Sorry to butt in, Mason. Sorry about that. We was getting feedback.
How is that?
That sounds better, Todd. Go ahead, y'all. Y'all got the floor.
I'm sorry. I had it on speakerphone. No, I really enjoy watching the ARCA race when they do have it on TV, so I do keep up on everything. So I'm huge into NASCAR, everybody knows. So I keep up on what everybody does. So I'm really looking forward to next year to see you kick it off really well.
I appreciate it, and so am I. I want to cap off this good year and look forward to the momentum that we have for next year.
Well, I appreciate you taking time and talking with me.
No problem, anytime.
Thank you very much, Todd.
Thank you.
Okay, Mason, I've got my good friend, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com, Mr. Stephen Wilson. I'm sure he has a few questions. Stephen, got the floor with Mason Mitchell, the ARCA Points Championship leader at this time, going into the last race at Kansas Speedway.
Hey, Mason. Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. You're pretty much at this point clinched into the championship, barring any bad luck that might happen there. I think Tim said about 35, 36. You've got to finish there at Kansas. My first question that I have for you is, and I asked this question earlier this year to Grant Enfinger. He changed over teams away from BCR Racing there to GMS Racing. Do you feel that that was something that kind of helped you out in him making that transition away from one team to another?
Maybe. I mean, I think he had to do something. I don't really know the whole story there, and quite honestly, I never really was too focused on it. Really, I was focused on my own program and trying to make it better and more successful. I don't know if that was going to go the whole year where he was currently at, but I know he had success over there. I know he had success where he's at now. But you know, I know switching teams and stuff like that. It's hard, you know, to get going on the right foot and to put it all together. And you know, if he would stay where he was at, or if he was where he's at right now, I think you know, I would still be in a decent, good position. You know, obviously, luck is luck, and certain situations happen. But you know, he had to do what he felt like was the best for him, and I don't blame him.
And going into this final race there at Kansas, and this obviously you guys started your own team this year, and everything that comes along with your own team, from the sponsors to having everybody on the crew to technical abilities, you know, working with manufacturers and things of that nature. What do you feel is your biggest obstacle that you're going to have to overcome there at Kansas Speedway?
As far as, you know, to win the race, to win the championship, or?
Just in general, what do you feel at a track like Kansas that you what is your biggest obstacle at a track like Kansas?
Well, I mean, I feel like our intermediate program and my driving styles helps us a little bit with the intermediate tracks. I enjoy those tracks I enjoy any track, but, well, obviously my first wins came on intermediate. Our intermediate record's pretty good. We're leading the Hoosier Super Speedway Challenge right now, which it's some type of point system, an award from Hoosier and ARCA from all the super speedways and intermediate tracks. So, I mean, I look forward to it. And I know our cars have been pretty good. You know, I obviously got to have the aerodynamic package and a setup that works correctly to keep you handling right on nine. You got to be a little bit on the free side, and you know, you got to put yourself in correct positions on restarts or when you're behind cars to get all the aero load that's on the car to make it, you know, rotate to the corner, get down the straightaway. And can't be thankful enough for having Roush Yates horsepower underneath the hood. Those guys have provided me with enormous amounts of power, and it's awesome to beat people down the straightaway. And so, I mean, the biggest thing is just making sure you're right, you're covered in all those positions. You know, with being my own team, it's kind of like a privateer team. We don't have all the alliances and resources with, you know, the bigger teams, and to get all the information and engineering support, stuff like that. So pretty much do everything in-house the old school way and dig deep and work hard.
And my final question I have for you is, looking at the ARCA series in general, it's kind of always been the feeder series into NASCAR, and you take a look at a lot of the champions there have moved on into NASCAR, and even NASCAR uses it there at Daytona to certify drivers to run there, whether it be the trucks or the nationwides. And also take a look at the coverage that is now coming into the sport with online timing and scoring like you guys now have in Fox Sports 1, having more live races. Where do you feel that the sport needs to go into the future to better position themselves as a whole?
Well, I think there's always opportunity out there for the sport and for everyone's career that's involved. I look at it as more some people might disagree with me on it, but now you gotta look at the entertainment value too. I feel like to strike the audience, it's gotta be eye catchy somewhere. You wanna get down and you just wanna go out there and have fun and race hard, but there's gotta be I think there's a lot more potential with the entertainment side of things where you get more of the teams, the crew, the drivers involved, and you got to entertain the fans and the people that obviously pay the bills. So I see that there's a lot of potential there, and there's a lot of growth just everywhere. And I feel like the sport, it's going in the right direction. With I know there were some announcements today with 2015 rule packages, some that I agree, some that I a little disagree with, but I'm not there right now, so I really don't have much input on it. I'm sure there's a lot of upper people that are working in the series that are going to make sure it goes in the right direction. And I feel like the RA or the driver alliance, their owner alliance thing that's been affiliated, hopefully will help everything keep it on track.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming on the show tonight. Good luck there at Kansas on hopefully your first championship, many to come in the future. And I will make sure I've got somebody there that's covering the weekend for us, and I'll make sure I send my writer over there to get a little one-on-one FaceTime with you before you get out there on track.
Sounds good. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you very much, Mason. And we always let every guest that we have come on, we let them thank their sponsors and thank everybody that's helped them get there. So you got the flow of Bud to thank whoever you want to.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity coming on tonight, and thanks for your time. I know everything's valuable, and it's been one heck of a season, and it seems like this year's kind of flown by, and only one race to go, and it's kind of sad at sometimes, but it's been really cool, and can't thank all everybody at ARC or the whole staff there, and Menards to put on a great series, and everybody at Mason Smith Motorsports, all the guys and their families, wives, girlfriends, fiancés, everybody that's been able, so flexible to make it happen, and obviously all great partners that came on board the whole season, Muslims, Applesauce, Wildlife Foundation, Florida, Thermal Technology Services to be there the whole season, and all the many more that we're trying to work with, and obviously my whole family back in Iowa, mom, dad, my girlfriend, everybody that's worked for me really hard I know it's been stressful for some people at times, but it's all paid off, so that might have been a little bit lengthy speech there, but I just want to thank you for your guys' time, too.
No, sir, you're definitely fine, Mason. And thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule. Tell Tim Clagg that we said thank you for hooking us up, and I will definitely see you at Talladega Super Speedway next year at the ARCA race. But good luck. Be safe at Kansas, and I'm not going to jinx everything. I'm going to say congrats on going to Kansas.
I appreciate it. You guys have a good night.
Yes, sir, you too. Thanks, Mason. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mason Mitchell, your points leader, going into the last race at Kansas. That I don't want to jinx him, so I'm not going to say nothing. Stephen, any last thoughts before we end this? And we've got that was a pretty good show, and we had a lot to talk about. We still got a lot to talk about, but we're tired. Stephen, any last thoughts? Go ahead, bud.
Now, no last thoughts. I will go out and venture to say I think this weekend at Dover is somebody made an analogy a little bit earlier today that Dover has become the new Richmond, and that's the way that it's now been positioned. Richmond was always as the last cutoff, and then you had 10 races to the chase. Well, Dover is definitely one of those now must be events that And I think that's going to be good for them. It's going to be able to help them better position themselves and get more people in the stands, because it's definitely going to be one crazy weekend there in Dover. We end up, there's usually a lot of attrition throughout the race. It's a hard track to run on that concrete. The tires are going to fall off. But in the end, I think it's really, a lot of it is just definitely going to come down to either Jimmy Johnson or Joey Logano. Both have been strong there in the past with winning multiple events here in the last couple of years. So I think, you know, when you take a look at those two guys, where I think Jimmy Johnson is going to falter a little bit later on in the season is when they get there to Talladega. And he's not traditionally run very well on restricted plate tracks. I think he has, one or two Daytona 500 wins, but those were, more or less a fluke than anything else, since he's always had a rough time. But, Dover is going to be something this weekend. Talladega is going to be the next event that we're all going to be watching for, leaving out of Dover. And, I think it'll be a good race.
Yeah, I do too, Stephen. And, just a little short thing here before you got to go. I know you got to go. You got your business you got to take care of. But like I said the other night, I hadn't heard nobody talk about that golden horseshoe stuck up you know where in Jimmy Johnson.
No. I think, you take a look traditionally in the past. I think a lot of it is that Jimmy Johnson has had to take one or two years once they've made the chase changes before they did anything and really were able to catch on.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And, Stephen, thank you very much for everything you do for the radio show and SpeedwayDigest.com and Save the Speedway. And, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to call it a night. Thank you, Todd Bigby, for coming on. Thank you, all of our fans. And we'll talk to y'all next Tuesday night. We've got Mr. Grant Lynch, president of Talladega Super Speedway. Good night, everybody.
Travel on, there's one day here and the next day gone. Sometimes you bend, sometimes you stand, sometimes you turn your back to the wind. There's a world outside every darkened door where blues won't haunt you anymore. Where the brave are free and lovers soar, come ride with me to the distant shore. We won't hesitate to break down the garden gate. There's not much time left today.